And that was all changed because of the worst president in American history. That's Bill Clinton, when he signed the Communications Act in 1993 and allowed six major corporations to take over control of 95% of all media. But anyway, I was always a little suspicious of the media when they kept attacking Garrison when he arrested Clay Shaw, and he said publicly that he had solved the murder, which indeed he did. When he went on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, he looked into camera and said that elements of the Central Intelligence Agency murdered our president. What happens if these people who own the country look at television and say, we can't have that kind of truth anymore? So they scuttle the fairness doctrine. In 2039, the law says that all the Warren Report files are supposed to come out, except Jim Garrison's. You won't find those for another 20 or 30 years. They will probably be destroyed.
Alzheimer's and dementia are the most misunderstood, cruelest, and costly of all diseases. Dementia starts 30 to 50 years before symptoms appear. Every 3 seconds, someone gets diagnosed. 10% at age 65, 25% at age 75, and 50% at age 85 will be diagnosed. But symptoms are reversible despite what conventional medicine will tell you. Research has conclusively shown that what you do or don't do in your middle years can greatly impact your risk of Alzheimer's. Make simple changes discussed in the free 26-page report available below. You will also be signed up for the free summit when you download this free report. You will learn the best foods, herbs, and supplements for brain health. And by following these, it will dramatically reduce the chance you'll end up with this devastating issue. Take action now before memory loss is irreversible.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today I have John Barber coming on. He's a 5-time Emmy Award-winning journalist and comedian. He has an amazing story. He did the Jim Garrison interviews. Jim Garrison is thought to have solved the JFK murder, and he was shut out by the mass media, and he actually had a trial. The government shut him out in cahoots with the mass media, and John Barber interviewed him. After he won an Emmy, the year he won his first Emmy, he was fired immediately after doing an interview with Jim Garrison, and it happened again later, and he'll explain the story, but he believes that the American people understanding what Jim Garrison came up with would change the United States. The files that Trump has been trying to release by the CIA on JFK are the Jim Garrison files. Those are the ones they're holding back. And those files would once and for all show the American people what truly happened with JFK. It's amazing the information that's in there. It is a slam dunk on, you know, the fact that there's a conspiracy, obviously, and what really happened and who was involved. He was also saying, you know, the mafia and Cuba being involved is a distraction that was created by the CIA to distract it from themselves. Very interesting and very eye-opening. He also sticks around for my patrons and talks about the first Israeli Zionist propaganda in the media and how that came to be, and the best book ever written on that he believes on show business. So he talks about that a little bit. But his movie, The Second Assassination of JFK, is just wonderful. And he talks about the Jim Garrison interviews, and I'll have a link below as to where you can get where you can see that movie. But now let's get into the interview now with John Barber. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Oh, well, hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me. And forgive me, once in a while I'll look at the monitor because I like to look at your face, but I think I'm supposed to be looking into the camera.
Oh, I think that's all of our problems, right? Because the camera's never where the monitor is, and so you're trying to do that right. So if you do, I'm okay with that. I don't know if listeners would understand, but that's what's going on. Well, I'm so glad that
you, with your professionalism, your pedigree, you're an Emmy Award-winning journalist who ran smack into the CIA and the Mockingbird Project. Can you explain what happened after you did the Jim Garrison interviews? And just give us an idea of what happened after that.
Well, I guess I actually probably have to start at the beginning when I accidentally met Jim Garrison, or I accidentally talked to Jim Garrison. As a matter of fact, Sarah, everything in my life, I've led a really charmed, magical life. And all of the wonderful things that happened to me totally by accident. And all the disasters were the things that I really planned very well. In any event, in 1970, I was a very successful stand-up comic at the time. And in 1970, you might not be aware of the fact that a company in America could only own 5 television stations or 5 radio stations or 5 newspapers. And that was all changed because of the worst president in American history. That's Bill Clinton, when he signed the Communications Act in 1993 and allowed 6 major corporations to take over control of 95% of all media. But anyway, in Los Angeles at that time, a local station's license could be severely challenged successfully by groups who were not being represented. And in Los Angeles at that time, it was Chicanos. They were marching on the streets 20,000 strong, and they were challenging the license at ABC Television, Los Angeles, KBC-TV. And so eventually, to appease the Chicanos and the Federal Communications Act, that he decided to do a morning show, a news interview show. And I auditioned as a comic against 40 other people, some of them successful journalists, and I got the show. It became the most successful show, morning show, in Los Angeles. We were bumping heads with the Today Show. This was 1970, and this was just half a year after Jim Garrison lost his case. Now, as a stand-up comic, I did a lot of very, very political stuff. And when it came around to the business of the assassination and Jim Garrison, all I recall, because I came from a very dysfunctional family in Toronto long before it was popular. And as a street kid, I was always a little suspicious of the media when they kept attacking Garrison when he arrested Clay Shaw, and he said publicly that he had solved the murder, which indeed he did. We'll get into that a little later. But in any event, I kept saying to my friends, listen, if the government has nothing against this, if they think the guy is a real kook and he has nothing against Shaw, why don't they get out of his way and let him get into a courtroom? And subsequently in 68, before he got into the courtroom and he went on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, he looked into camera and said, the elements of the Central Intelligence Agency murdered our president. Well, at that time, there was something called fair play and equal time. So when I had Governor Reagan on my show, I had to have a Democrat, then I had to have a socialist, then I had to have a Nazi. And in any event, what happened is, quite accidentally, I happened to read Heritage of Stone in a bookstore. And it was written by Jim Garrison. Now, by this time, he had lost his case, and the government proved that the man was a kook. The media continued to malign him. And I was staggered, Sarah, when I read that he had to take Time Life to the Supreme Court to get the Zapruder film. There was a doctor named Fink who was called as a defense witness, but under cross-examination said that a general or generals prevented an actual autopsy of the president. The material that he introduced in the book was never in the media. So I was so excited. The next morning, I called him in New Orleans, and he happened to answer the phone. And I said, my name's John Barber. I've got the most successful morning show live here in Los Angeles. I just read your book. And Sarah, he chuckled and he said, oh, you must be the other one. I only sold 2 copies. Well, I invited him on the show and he said, John, you'll never get away with it. I said, "Sir, I just won my first Emmy." I didn't know I was going to win four more. As a matter of fact, I was the only one on television to win Emmys for both news and entertainment. Anyway, finally, I talked him into being on the show. And the next week, I was fired and he was canceled. Quite honestly, I had not the foggiest idea that it was related to anything to do with assassination or the CIA or Project Mockingbird. I'm in show business. I was a comic, for crying out loud, and here I was doing this great show. I just thought it was another job that I had lost. I ended up at Channel 11 doing reviews. I was the first one in America to do.
So you just thought, Nat, they fired you. You were an Emmy award-winning journalist. You just won an Emmy, and the next week you got fired, and you didn't connect it at that point to the JFK, the Jim Garrison interview?
No, not at all. I just thought it was
interesting. What did they tell you? Why did they say you were fired?
How do you legally move a few dollars or millions of dollars in the U.S. banking system without it being tracked back to you? I've been showing people how to get financial privacy, financial anonymity, in fact, for 25 years. I get people out of debt situations, even during the middle of a levy or lawsuit. Then I create a legal fortress around the cash flow and assets that cannot be broken, even by the IRS. For some professionals and small business owners, I even have to use the dark web to handle large transactions invisibly. If you're still the personal signer for any bank account or not using the dark web for business, you're a sitting duck. Visit me at aceofcoins.com to learn the secrets to total financial privacy.
They just said I was fired and they were going to replace me with a fellow named Ralph Story who had done a successful show on CBS. So I ended up at Channel 11 doing movie reviews. I was the first person in America to review movies on the news. I'm going to tell you something interesting about the Fairness Doctrine. At that time, there could never be a Rush Limbaugh or a Hannity or Bill O'Reilly or anybody like that, because if you put those people on the air, you would have had to give equal time to Gore Vidal or Jane Fonda or any liberal. You were not allowed to pontificate. It was impossible. But that all changed, of course, with Bill Clinton and Project Mockingbird. So Tom Brokaw saw me on Channel 11 and brought me to NBC. I was there for 5 years as the film critic. I was at Los Angeles Magazine for 10 years. Now, interesting thing about this. At the time, if any critic in the newspapers or on radio or television severely maligned an author or anybody, let's say they were reviewing a book, that author could request equal time and often get it. I was the only critic in America to have such a case heard before the Supreme Court. Do you remember a movie called Soylent Green, Charlton Heston? Does that ring a bell with you?
No, I don't remember that one.
Well, it was an absolutely dreadful film. And of course, when you're attacking anybody, as Don Rickles proved in his career, they get laughs. So I was able to write really funny jokes attacking the movie, but I felt so bad about what I did, as I said to the audience, "I'm sorry, I really should say something nice about this film because a lot of people worked hard on it." So I will say that the sets are beautiful, but they would be more beautiful if they'd been placed in front of Charlton Heston. Well, anyway, the producer was so upset he demanded equal time at NBC. Down. They took it to courts in Los Angeles. They turned it down. They took it to the Supreme Court in California. And 5 years later, it was heard in the Supreme Court of the United States. They ruled against the producer saying John Barber's reviews are of no public import. So that's what it was like in those days. But let me tell you a little bit about Jim Garrison's case. Jim Garrison did not lose that case. He lost the conspiracy portion of the case, but he won the perjury conviction of Clay Shaw, but the federal government stepped in to prevent his prosecution of Clay Shaw. Now, what happened to Jim Garrison was absolutely criminal, because at the height of the trial, NBC had a producer named Walter Sheridan, who was aligned with the CIA and the FBI. He was assigned by all three of them to go to New Orleans and literally destroy Jim Garrison. Well, Jim Garrison's main witness in the perjury case was Perry Raymond Russo. Perry Raymond Russo happened to be present with Clay Shaw, David Ferry, and Lee Harvey Oswald when they were talking about triangulation and the murder of John Kennedy at Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas. So after Garrison arrested Shaw, Perry was afraid that he would be called and indicted. So he ran to the office and he said, "Well, I was there, but I had nothing to do with it. It was a party and they just happened to be talking." Anyway, Walter Sheridan wanted this main witness removed from Garrison's jurisdiction. He arranged for him to get a job at $50,000 a year at an insurance agency in Los Angeles, California. And he called Perry Raymond Russo. He said, "I'm coming down to do an interview with you and offer you the job. We will guarantee that. And we're going to get you out of Garrison's jurisdiction because we're going to take him down. And if you don't come along, you're going to be taken down too." Well, Perry called Mr. Garrison. And Mr. Garrison said, "Would you wear a wire to that meeting?" And he did. So they have this bribe from NBC on sound. It's recorded. So Garrison brings criminal charges against NBC and against Walter Sheridan. Now, I must tell you, NBC should have lost their license. This is the most important murder investigation in American history, the most important crime ever committed in America, and literally a coup d'etat in the murder of a president. And it's obvious that he was shot from the front and not from the back. As a matter of fact, on camera, Mr. Garrison said it was a slam dunk operation, a no risk operation for them, because before the fact, they had help from the media so that they could set this fiction in motion before the truth began to sink in. And of course, we saw that in the case of Dan Rather when he went on television, never showed us the Bruder film, and said the bullet hits him in the head and his head goes violently forward. But in any event, NBC was not charged. David Sarnoff should have been in prison. Their license lost. Walter Sheridan should have been in prison. But instead, the government stepped in, stopped those charges. But the FCC, because of the fairness doctrine, had to give Garrison equal time. He went on, you can Google it, late night television, 11:30 at night, and Jim Garrison is describing how the Central Intelligence Agency murdered the president of the United States. Well, the people that own our country, and it's certainly not you and I or anybody who votes, because voting in America is as meaningless as voting for a share of General Motors stock. I have General Motors stock and I vote all the time, but I have no say about the design of the car or how many miles the carburetor gets or anything like that. You have no say about what happens in your country. As you can see from Iraq, millions of people protesting on the street that there were no weapons of mass destruction, and still Bush and his war criminal cronies still destroyed that country and to this day are still destroying the lives of the soldiers who fought there, nearly 20 suicides a day. So what happens if these people who own the country look at television and say, "We can't have that kind of truth anymore"? So they scuttle the fairness doctrine, and what had happened, and we'll get to it in the film. The first film I did was called The Garrison Tapes, and I did it as a result of Oliver Stone's film JFK, which was at that time the most important movie ever made in America. But now the most important movie ever made in America is part two of the Garrison Tapes. It's called The American Media and the Second Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. And if anyone, it's very difficult to watch because, as Jack Nicholson said in A Few Good Men, you can't handle the truth. It is very difficult to know that we became what Ronald Reagan once called the Soviet Union, the evil empire. And that's indeed what we are. We have millions of fabulous citizens, but they have no control or no say in the government that that runs it. So if you would want to know a little bit more about my interview with Jim Garrison, I'd be happy to tell you about that.
Yeah, how did he get involved in doing this court case? What was the lead up to that, and how did you end up interviewing him?
Well, that's two great questions, because Jim I'll do it this way. Accidentally, a year before I got it on the air, I was unemployed, and I said, this dropout Canadian is going to change the face of American television with what I call the entertainment of reality. And I created the first reality show. A year later, quite by accident, in 1979, I got it on NBC. The show was called Real People with myself, Skip Stevenson, and Sarah Purcell. A bang, knockout hit. In any event, I had only gotten to talk to Jim Garrison twice, because after I was canceled in 1970, I'd only talked to him. I talked to him once during the Vietnam War just to talk about it. And then he called me for 4.5 years, I was Frank Sinatra's private writer. And he knew I had this long feud with Johnny Carson. So one night, to sort of get even with Carson on his own and to tweet Carson, he booked me on The Tonight Show. When he hosted the show, he booked me to do a stand-up. And if you go to YouTube, you can track down that show. But anyway, in the monologue, I happen to mention Watergate. And I say Watergate is something that might have put America on the brink of democracy. And it got a huge hand. And Garrison called me and asked me if he could quote that and steal some of the other jokes. And I said, absolutely, certainly. So I only talked to him three times, but then Real People got on the air, was this monster, monster hit. As a matter of fact, it was partially responsible, or it played a major role in getting that Vietnam Memorial built in Washington, D.C. That story is told in the film, but I'm not going to tell it here. In any event, the owner of the show, the fellow's name was George Slaughter. He was co-creator of a show called Laugh-In. And I met George when he called me and asked me to come on the revival as the guest critic and one of the writers, which I did. It was a show that introduced Robin Williams, that genius, to America. What a sad end to that wonderful young talent. But in any event, what happened is, when a show is successful, the networks usually go to the owner of the show, not the creator of the show, and ask him to do another show. Do you remember a movie called Network?
Maybe.
You never saw Network?
I probably did. You have to fill me in on what was in it.
You know the phrase, I'm mad as hell, not going to take it anymore?
Yeah.
Peter Finch and Network. This was the most brilliantly written movie ever made in America. As a matter of fact, when I was a critic, I said, this is the only movie ever made in this country in which people will go to listen to. If you Google that film, it's almost like a documentary now. It's just brilliant. Anyway, it was an enormous success, written by Patty Chayefsky. So NBC calls George Slaughter and said, could you do a television version of Network? And so George said, yes, I will do that. And so he got a contract to do that show. Well, I was 24 hours a day trying to keep Real People on the air. And he kept coming to me and say, help me do this show because it's not working. And I said, no. But Sarah, one day, almost a year after the fact, I read in the Los Angeles Times, page 13, House Select Committee on Assassinations had concluded 4 shots had been fired in Dealey Plaza. Therefore, a conspiracy existed. I got on the phone immediately to Mr. Garrison. And I said, Mr. Garrison, do you feel vindicated? And again, this sardonic, great sense of humor from this articulate man. He said, John, I feel like a blind man who's gotten a small trophy in a very dark room. Only I know I got it. And I said, well, you must be swamped. He said, what do you mean swamped? Well, you must be getting calls from Dan Rather and Walter Cronkite and Hunkley and Brinkley. He said, John, you're the only one who's called me. And I said, well, I'm going to come to New Orleans and put you on camera, and you're going to do your story for this new show. And he said to me, he says, John, again, you're never going to get away with it. And I haven't told this story to anyone in 10 years. I just don't want to talk about it anymore. But come on down and I'll give you the details. September 5th, 1981, Sarah, I sat with him for 3.5 hours in his office. It was the most thrilling, most exciting, most disturbing 3.5 hours of my entire life. He gave me not only his story and how we got into it, he gave me everything. He gave me the death certificate signed by Dr. McClellan that showed that the fatal shot struck in the right temple. I mean, it was just massive.
It was just a slam dunk that it was a conspiracy.
There's no question about it. So there's so much material. And the show that Schlatter's doing is called Speak Up America. But there's so much material, it has to be a two-parter. Now, the first part, which was about 8 minutes long, starts with Mr. Garrison looking into the camera and saying to America, the first time on prime time, Lee Harvey Oswald had nothing to do with the assassination. As a matter of fact, the paraffin tests show he never fired a shot. Well, you could hear a gasp in the audience, and the place was filled. And I don't know why it was so filled. It was almost like metaphysically the news was getting around that Garrison had something important to say. The theater was jammed as though the Pope was there, or though the president was there. Well, it had to be a part two. And everybody was waiting for part two. Now, when I interviewed Mr. Garrison, I asked him how many shooters there were in Dealey Plaza. And he said, John, there were three, two in front, one in back. It's triangulation. There were probably three men on each team. They probably had, aside from somebody to pick up the shells, they had a radio man, because it's the most important kill that they have in history. I mean, they killed a lot of people around the world, including the democratically elected president of Iran named Mossadegh, who had nationalized British Petroleum, and Eisenhower and Dulles had him murdered because he was setting a very bad example. We did this all around the world, as John Perkins points out in his book, Economic Hitman. So in any event...
Well, before you go on, can you readjust the screen again? Because it keeps moving down.
I'm sorry.
You're going to end up having it at your eyes if I don't do this.
Well, then it'll be closer to the look that they have on 60 Minutes with cut off at the lips and the eyes.
Okay, so, keep going.
And of course, now, he said, two in the front, one in the back, nobody at the book depository. That's just where they planted the patsy. And then I asked him, how many people do you think were aware John Kennedy would be murdered in Dealey Plaza? And he said, it's on a need-to-know basis. It started the day that he denied air cover on the Bay of Pigs. That's when they started to plan the killing of John Kennedy. And he eventually said probably about 32 people. Anyway, what happened? Again, the theater is totally jammed. I am building a new house for my family with the enormous amounts of money that I'm making. So I'm not there for part two. I'm just at home watching it. And I hired Marjo Gortner to do the interview in my place on camera. And what happened is that George Schlatter, in the middle of the night, took the field producer, a dear friend of mine, Donna Cannon. All of this is seen in the American media, in the second assassination of President John F. Kennedy. He took her down and re-edited my story. So then I'm sitting at home watching it. And Marjo Gortner looks at Mr. Garrison and said, Mr. Garrison, how many shooters were there in Dealey Plaza, do you think? And Jim Garrison says, 32. That's how George Schlatter re-edited. Then my phone rings. And it's Schlatter
to
laughing
make him out to
about
look like an idiot.
Exactly. And he calls and he's gasping with air, laughing about the fact that this man is an idiot. And I start screaming that Schlatter is an idiot. And quite accidentally, in those days, we used to have answering machines. We didn't have cell phones. We had answering machines. And I recorded accidentally Schlatter saying this. And I screamed at him that I hoped that Garrison would sue him and NBC again because he would own both of them. I slammed down the phone. I called Mr. Garrison and Sarah. I was sobbing. I was literally, only the second time I ever really cried out loud in my life. The first time was when a very nice consul general in Toronto, the United States consulate, allowed me to come back into the country after being kicked out of the country twice. That was the first time in my life I ever cried. But anyway, I'm sobbing to Mr. Garrison. And I said, I have the tape. Please sue them, sue them, sue them. And Sarah, he said so calmly, John, if I sued everyone who maligned me, I would never see my family. I would never get into court. I would never see this wonderful staff that I have. We love your show. Just send us a couple of Real People t-shirts. And of course, the next day I confronted Schlatter, almost got into a physical fight over his venality and his cruelty. I could never understand why he did it, because he'd never uttered a word ever about politics. Of course, though, when George Bush became president, George Schlatter was the one who ended up producing his inauguration balls. So in any event, that also cost us Real People. I was fired from Real People after that. But anyway, the amazing thing, in the film and on camera when he is talking, not only was he so smart about the investigation into Lee Harvey Oswald and Clay Shaw, he investigated the origins of the Central Intelligence Agency.
And he
said that this was created in the 50s. But the man who drafted the articles for the CIA was not an intelligence man. It was a Wall Street lawyer, James Forrestal. It's all about business. And of course, in the film, we find out that James Forrestal begins to question America's foreign policy. They commit him to a psychiatric ward at Bethesda Naval Hospital, and he jumps out of the 16th floor window and supposedly commits suicide. But Garrison said what they did, they also created something called Project Mockingbird. And the purpose of Project Mockingbird was to infiltrate all American media and change the hearts and minds of Americans about peace. Garrison points out in the film, the first fake war was the Soviet Union. Because the Soviets lost 25 million people, they were in no condition to fight the United States, the enemy of the United States, as Eisenhower pointed out again in the film, was the military-industrial complex and their threat. So what was the major threat to America? Was peace. Because if you have 1.5 million men coming back to the United States, how many refrigerators can they make? How many TV sets? But you can make a $10,000 bomb that goes off in 10 seconds and keep making them forever. And then it's obvious the next fake war was Vietnam with the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, now recognized as a false flag. And of course, the worst was weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And it proved that Americans marching on the streets democratically, which they did in 68 in Chicago, this is how they ended the war. The government didn't end the war. It was people rioting on the streets. This is how smart the people are who own this country. They eliminated the draft. Because during Vietnam, it was middle class and upper middle class coming back in body bags. But these people looked at this, people who own us, and said, well, we can't have a draft anymore. How do we get soldiers? Well, what we do is we don't give them jobs. So they create NAFTA, they send the jobs overseas. And then we have to dumb down the citizenry. And you can see, you can go to high school tests written in 1918 that college students in America today cannot pass. That's how dumbed down Americans are. I know three young men who are college graduates, honor students, cannot get a job and are joining the military. And they're going to end up being hired killers.
That's awful. That's That's just awful. I've had very decorated military people come onto my show talking about the draft and how eliminating the draft created a professional army who doesn't, they don't talk anymore. It's gotten out of control because now we have all these suicides. And before, when people came back, they would talk about all the problems overseas and wars and how awful it is. And they, you know, because they're not professional soldiers. Now they come back and they're trained to be professional at all times more. And even though they're dumbed down, they don't talk. Not, they do a little bit, but not like we used to. And so it helps perpetuate it as well.
It's absolutely, you know, it's, you asked me about Jim Garrison and how he got involved. Jim Garrison is an ex-FBI agent. He was in the American military. In the one photograph that he had in his office, he was at Dachau when it was liberated in Nazi Germany. And there's a picture of him sitting by the wall there, by the barbed wire. And underneath it, he has written, "Lest we ever forget." Now, Jim Garrison says on camera, "John, I was military, and I had this syndrome about believing authority. I could never believe that my government would cover up the assassination, and I couldn't believe that they would even participate in it." So again, it was an accident, because he believed the Warren Report until he accidentally met Senator Hale, or Congressman Hale Boggs. Hale Boggs was the only dissenting member of the Warren Report, a dissent that he printed but was never published in the Warren Report. And he says to Garrison on a plane, he says, "That kid could have never shot that president with that old Mannlicher carcano. I'm a hunter and I should know." What happened to Senator Hale Boggs? He goes on the floor of Congress and he said, "J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI have lied to us about the murder of John Kennedy." And if 3 months later, Bill Clinton drives him to the airport, he gets on a private plane and it disappears over Alaska. There is a segment in the documentary. It is in 10 parts. And there's a segment called "The Carrot and the Stick." And it shows the people who are rewarded by following the Warren Report, which begins with Dan Rather, an ordinary street reporter who ends up becoming the $8 million man as the anchor man on CBS. It shows all of these people who benefited. Not one person became successful investigating the murder of John Kennedy. Scores and scores became successful by maligning those who did investigate it, like Mark Lane and Harold Weisberg and Penn Jones and many others. It is just a travesty. And somebody once said to me, you know, it is so appropriate. It was a major compliment on my film, "John, that you have made the most important movie in American history. And it is ironic that it is made by a comic, because the sickest joke ever played on America is the Warren Report."
Yeah, so obviously. So, you know, there's a lot of people that, well, frankly, like my dad, you know, he and like what you were and a lot of other people who just don't want to, they went their whole lives believing that the government is a certain way, and they don't want to believe that our own government would actually do this to us. And then the other thing is, they said, well, if they really did it, then the conspiracy would be known everywhere. Now, you know, JFK, I think the majority of people realize it's a conspiracy, but I still think that they have a hard time saying, yeah, but this was our government that did this.
Oh, okay. Two things. Sometimes when you're talking to somebody, without giving you the facts, there's a ring of truth about what they say. Because when I interviewed Mr. Garrison, I said, "Mr. Garrison, you were in the military, you're an ex-FBI agent, you're aligned to no political party, actually you're rather conservative, you're an independent. What on earth ever made you think you could take on the federal government?" And Sarah, without missing a beat, he said, "John, I guess as a kid, I saw one too many Frank Capra movies." Which is so true, because that's what I grew up in, this little theater. When I was a kid, having no home to go to, really, I used to live in a theater. And I used to live in a library. So stories kept me alive. And that's why I eventually became a storyteller. But I'll tell you something very interesting. When I talked to Mr. Garrison on the phone in 1970, and he said to me, he said, John, you know, it's 1970. You know what the Harris poll says? And I said, what, sir? He said, the Harris poll says that over 68% do not believe Lee Harvey Oswald either killed the president or could have done it alone. He says, but get this, only 23% of all Americans want a new real investigation. What does that say about us? Without missing a beat, I said to him, Mr. Garrison, it says to me, I know what my mother and father did on the pool table or in the alley or in the rumble seat of the car or in the bedroom to conceive me. But don't ever tell me my mother's not a virgin. Well, he howled and he said, can I steal that? Can I steal that? Well, in any event, when it was all over, after 5 years, I just finished writing my autobiography, which is coming out in April through Trine Day and Chris Milligan. And it's called Your Mother's Not a Virgin.
Because that's really what we're talking about here.
You're absolutely correct. I don't want to know that. Please don't. And that's why, you know, the reaction to the film, when I first screened it a year and a half ago at the Texas Theater, where Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested, there were 300 people present. At the end of the film, there was a spontaneous standing ovation, an eruption that lasted about 10 minutes. I was supposed to do a question and answer. I couldn't. I was so moved to tears. I just had to get up on the airplane and leave. But 75% of those people, Sarah, had not even been born when John Kennedy was killed. Mm-hmm. So why are they there? Because from what they have heard and read and figured out for themselves, there's something really amiss in America that this man represented. St. John Hunt, his father is supposedly had this deathbed confession in which the father blames a guy named Cord, who was married to a woman, Mary Meyer, who had an affair with John Kennedy. This is all in the film and played a major part in the assassination. And E. Howard Hunt said he just played he was a bench warmer, but he was not a bench warmer. But St. John Hunt said at a conference that his father told him, and this I believe thoroughly, these people who murdered him thought they were being heroes and saving America from what they said was a threat to the American way of life and national security. But you see, the dozen families that own this country, they consider themselves the nation. So it is national security that's being threatened if we knew the truth about what these people are doing to us. I mean, it's horrifying. Look at something like student debt. It's Bernie Sanders, that ingrate, that Democratic Ron Paul who turned tail and ran. But during the debates, he was the only one who brought up student loan. Do you know that student loans in this country is in the trillions? It's almost 10% of the national debt, and student loans cannot be dismissed either with bankruptcy or death. So if you have a child who takes out a student loan and that child dies, you're responsible for it.
Unless it's to a bank. It's because it's a loan to the federal government. Isn't that crazy?
That's right. Well, and the film shows you how easy it is to solve the crime of John Kennedy. It is still an open case in the Justice Department.
Are you having trouble losing weight? It could be due to insulin levels that are out of balance. Learn what fat-flushing food helps balance your insulin levels. It's basically a hormone that determines how much fat your body stores. Over 240,000 women have successfully melted unwanted fat off their body faster than you would think possible, keeping it off for good. Learn how so many people have melted fat so quickly. Click the link below.